Hello and welcome back to another episode. I am Renee.
And I am Jenny.
And we are the Intrusively Unhinged Sisters. So today we're going to be delving into a case that has puzzled investigators and the public alike for over three decades.
I thought you were going to say 30.
Well, that would be 300 years, yeah? If I said 30 decades?
Yeah.
Yeah, no. I only mean 30 years.
Okay. Yeah. 3 decades.
Yes. Okay. So we're going to be talking about today the disappearance of Tara Calico.
Sure that is how you pronounce it because we looked it up because we were going back and forth. So if it is incorrect, we are so sorry.
Yes. I do want to point out that I got the pronunciation from a news reporting from the sheriff. So I just went off what she said. I hope we're right.
Say it wrong. It's her fault.
Yes. So I'm not going to go too far into detail because they do have their own podcast on this. So I feel like that's a lot more detail. So if you want to hear it, we'll go ahead and post that in our episode description. But yeah, let's go ahead and get started. So our case is going to take us back to September 20th, 1988.
1988, almost
1990s. Oh, I read that too as 88 and still said 98. I don't know what's wrong. Sorry, guys. Okay, so it's in a small, usually peaceful town of Ballin, New Mexico. And I'm pretty sure that's how you pronounce it also. But if it's not, I apologize. I will be apologizing a lot, guys. So in this small, peaceful town, this is where 19-year-old Tara Calico vanished without a trace. Now, it's around 9:30 in the morning, and Tara rode off on her mother's pink 10-speed Huffy bike. Now, I don't know exactly, like, what brand or what type or what it looked like, the Huffy bikes, but I'm pretty sure they're, like, the ones that we used to ride around the neighborhood on.
Yeah, no, definitely, like the ones we had when we were younger.
Yeah. She was going on her bike ride that she did every day, which was 36 miles long.
Wow.
Yeah. No, thank you. No, thank you.
I struggle getting out of bed and walking to my door.
Yeah. The bathroom is, I better be ready to just be dying. I do not want to get up. 36 miles? What does that do to your legs, though?
Massive legs.
Okay, anyways, guys, so this was a route that would go up Highway 47 to Highway 60 and then back, one which she rode often and occasionally with her mother. Now, that morning when Tara left, she asked her mother, Patty Doyle, to come find her if she wasn't home by noon because she had plans with her boyfriend at 12:30-ish to go play tennis or just had some type of plans. I've seen different reports on what she was actually supposed to be doing.
Okay, so sources differ.
Yes. But noon came and went. Tara did not. It's devastating.
Yeah.
So Patty did what she was asked. She went out looking for her daughter. Only she didn't find her or any evidence of her. Anything, just any signs of her.
I want to say kudos to her mom, though, because how many times you'd be like, if I'm not back at this time, give me a call or come and look for me or something's wrong. And most people will be like, okay, and then nobody follows that up.
So yeah.
Kudos to her mom for, like, actually being exactly. Like, you know what? She's not back. We need to figure out what's going
exactly.
on.
Exactly. Now, it was at 3 p.m. after some sources say that she did multiple searches of the route. Between noon and 3 when she finally called and reported her missing.
I'm assuming she drove it, though. She doesn't yes. bike it.
No, yeah. No, because the reason why Tara was riding her mom's bike is because Tara's bike had a flat tire. So she couldn't ride it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess I was just assuming there was another bike, or maybe she stole a neighbor's.
Yeah, no. Okay. So I'm assuming it was probably Jove, yeah.
Okay.
So at 3 p.m., she reports her daughter officially missing with the police, and search teams immediately start searching. Okay. Now, police and search teams did locate pieces of the Walkman that Tara was known to carry with her when she went on her daily rides.
they knew it was hers, or they knew it was one that was like hers?
They, so obviously they, the Patty was there and she identified it.
Okay.
So she knew it to be Tara's. Okay. Yes. Also because the tape that was seen, found with it, was known to be one of the tapes that Tara listened to routinely because it was one of her favorites.
Okay, so circumstantially, it's all adding up to be like, this could be Tara's, mm-hmm. but it's not a definitive, this is hers, it has her name on it.
Yes.
But most likely, this belongs to her.
Yes. Okay. Now, there were no witnesses located, but there were some that, I want to say, like, viewing witnesses, like people who had seen her previous to her going missing, like leading up to the missing.
Like hours up to it or days?
Okay. Minutes, yeah. Okay, so now witnesses were able to give off a time frame from where she could have gone missing. That would have been about 20 minutes before Patty started searching for her.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's pretty close time gap.
Very, it's a small mm-hmm. gap. Now, witnesses would tell police that they saw Tara riding her bike while she was being closely followed by a 1950s Ford truck. This was a truck that was light and colored with a camper shell attached to the back and New Mexico tags. The driver was said to be in his late 30s or early 40s, white or light skinned, and he had either red or brown hair. Now, based off that, you would think you have a really good description of someone you can, like, more than likely was the last person to see her.
It's better than a lot of the descriptions that I've yeah. heard. Like, it's more detailed, more mm-hmm. descriptive.
Now, later on, I'm going to throw something that kind of, it just threw me for a loop on it, is because a lot of people said it was just one man in the truck. So just focus on that, okay? Keep what? That in the back of your mind. It was all of witnesses, earlier witnesses that gave the time frame, all stated it was just a one man in the car.
But a curveball's about to come.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, threw me for a loop. So it was in, obviously, they never found located Tara. Now, there were some photos that were released, are found, like 6 to 9 months after Tara went missing.
Photos found?
It was like Polaroids.
Okay, like the ones you take with your little camera. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So now the Polaroid was a picture of what appeared to be a teen girl and a young boy tied up with duct tape, laid out like how we're sitting similar, mm-hmm. but in the back of a van.
That's creepy.
Yeah. A couple, like two more photos showed up a little bit further down the line, but it's never been actually verified if the girl in the photo is Tara. But a lot of people speculate, including her mother, do believe that it was her.
So they think that the teen girl was her?
Mm-hmm, in the photo.
How old was Tara?
19.
Okay.
And then it makes a little bit even more sense, because if you listen to the description of Tara, like, she was 5'5", or 5'7", somewhere between there, 5'5", to 5'7". She weighed about 115 to 120 pounds. She had brown hair with hazel eyes, and she had a cowlick, like, at her right temple. And then she had a large scar on the back of her right shoulder, and then a dime-sized 28, kind of, like, Mexico-shaped birthmark on her left calf. Left? No, sorry. It just says on the back of one of her legs. I can't really say for sure if it was left or right, but in the photo, it appears to be, like, on the right leg.
The right leg.
Yeah. So I'm assuming it has to be on the right, because in the photo, it appears to be on the right, unless I'm not thinking of, like, optics. Because when you take the picture, it's going to appear. Something like that.
It's on one of her legs, though.
Yes.
Okay.
And in the photo, it appears there is that birthmark on the girl's leg. So, like, possibly.
Yeah.
So that was, like, 9 months from when she went missing. So, about 1989. Okay. Let's go ahead and fast forward to 2008.
Oh, that's a big jump.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming nothing happened.
Nothing. Okay. Nothing. No witnesses, no new evidence. Doesn't necessarily go closed.
Just a little cold.
Just a little inactive.
Okay.
With nothing to work on, like, what else can you do? So in 2008, Sheriff Rene Rivera said he actually knew what happened and who did it. But there just wasn't enough evidence to be able to go ahead with any charges.
Then how does he know what happened and who did it? What evidence led him there?
I don't know. But from what he says, it was two teen boys that had some sort of an accident. They freaked out and got rid of her body. And now without her remains, you can't really bring any charges to the boys. No body, no case, right?
Wrong. I think there's a lot of cases where
body. Oh, yeah.
But it's still... Yeah. I'm just a little troubled, Renee. How did we get from... There's not enough evidence to convict them, but there's two boys, there's an accident, and they covered up her body. How did you know that there was two boys? How did you know there was an accident? And how do you know that the body was covered if there was no evidence to lead you to this direction?
Or no viable evidence for trial. I think they never clarified, and I feel like that's a clarification we need. Is it just no evidence at all, like, in your defense? Like, what led you here?
Yeah.
But I want to see, is it evidence that was just not viable enough to bring into a courtroom?
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get that.
Because, like, that makes, that's, that, yeah. Exactly, like, then that's something that, like, keeps going through my mind when I keep hearing all these updates on it. Yes.
Details matter.
And I get it, but we are going 30 plus years. I promise you revealing even the smallest details of, like, how insignificant is this evidence, or is there even evidence in it? That is important. And maybe they're doing that because they don't want to taint the future jury. Because let me go ahead and fast forward a little bit more. Let's go ahead and jump a little further up, Jen.
Okay, to where?
September 2023.
Oh, snap.
Yeah. Okay. We brought it all the way to the present, guys. So, close. About 6 months ago.
I was going to say, we do know we're not in 2023 anymore.
Sadly. Take me back.
I'm good. I like even numbered years.
Me too.
Yeah.
I feel like those give me, you know what? Yeah. Yeah.
Keep me here.
Okay, so as of September 2023, the DA's office has begun reviewing the case filings from over 30 years of reports and notes and suspects that they are now going to be reevaluating and re-eliminating.
And re-interviewing, I hope?
I'm assuming if they're having to do, like, the re-elimination, it would have to be the re-interviews.
Yeah, hopefully 30 years later, some of those people are still around.
Yeah. But it was a pretty young crowd.
Even the witnesses?
One of the witnesses, no, he was a little bit older. So I have a timeline that I want to read out to you guys. It's a little bit long, but I'm going to try to shorten it as fast as I can. But before I get into that, let me just let you guys know, as of right now, there have been no new updates on the case, and we will be following along. Like I said, we didn't go too deep into detail, but this timeline, though, like, some of these timelines on these details, and I actually got this, you guys, off a website called Uncovered.
It'll be in the link.
Yes, I was like, I got so lost just digging in. So, like, I would read a detail and I'd get kicked into a whole new case. Like, down a case. Yes. There's another case that actually tied in to Tara Calico. Calico. See, I want to keep saying it a different way. And that was actually, I wrote it down, Deborah Lansdale, and I really want to talk about her. So that's a story for a whole nother episode.
Yes.
But okay, so let's go ahead and jump into the timeline. It's 9:30, September 20th, 1988. Tara heads out on her bike ride south down Route 47. Okay, now between 11 a.m. and 11:30, Tara is actually last seen about a mile and a half south of Balin in Rio Communities during her round trip. Okay, 11:30 a.m. to 12 p.m. Witness Ishmael De La Rosa reports seeing a primer gray Ford 1950s era pickup truck with a camper shell slowly following a girl heading north on a bike on New Mexico 47, which I would assume that's Route 47 highway, something like that.
I would think so.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to kind of jump into that a little. Now, De La Rosa is a key witness in the case and is actually was driving towards Cottonwood Farms when he started seeing the light-colored camper truck, which he thinks it was actually a 1953. Just be a little bit more specific, help tie it down. And the truck was driving very slowly, around 10 to 15 miles an hour. And that's when he actually saw a human running alongside the truck.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
A person running alongside the truck that was driving.
Crouching over. So ducking down while he's running alongside the truck. While the truck is driving at a very slow speed.
But following Tara.
Yes.
Okay.
He said as he passed, he was able to get a good look at the driver, which he later reported to be a Caucasian middle-aged man with bright red hair, bloodshot eyes, a puffy face, and a scar or a little groove from his left eye to his temple. He also noticed a rack of freshly pressed khaki shirts hanging in the back of the truck. Like when you see
like work shirts.
Yes.
You pick them up from dry cleaners. Yes. Okay.
Yes. Okay. It was at 4 p.m. that day when he heard about the report of a missing girl on the bicycle. That's when he decided to call the police and speak up. Not say anything when he saw suspicious actions.
Yeah. Driving on a highway 10 to 15 miles an hour really slow. That's already like, why are you driving that slow on a highway?
Mm-hmm.
But also with a man crouching beside it, or a human crouching beside, running next to the truck, following behind. I would have stopped and been like, hey, is something going on? Is something wrong with your car?
Do you guys
why
need
are
help?
You running by the car? Is something going on with you? And why are you guys following that girl? Are you guys all together?
Yeah. Are you making sure she's staying safe? Anything like that? I don't know. I would definitely. Because, like, in some reports that I've seen, he even said it just didn't seem right. Something seemed wrong. And you didn't stop. You are a grown man, and you had that this is wrong feeling, and you kept driving.
That happens a lot, though.
Just no. Now, he spoke with Officer Ray Flores, who seemed reluctant to take his report. Are you kidding me? Officers, get it together. Now, it says here that there is a report that under hypnosis, De La Rosa was able to pick out a man from the photo lineup, and Flores arranged to meet the following day, but never showed up, and then didn't respond to any follow-up calls by the witness.
Okay.
So September 20th, still same day, 12:05, that is when Patty wakes her husband, John, who actually was home. He was just sleeping because he works overnights. And told her she was going to be taking the car to retrace Tara's route. Now, 12:15, Tara talks to Jack Cole, Patty talks to Tara's boyfriend, Jack Cole. At 12:30, he confirms he still has the tennis date. Now, 12:35, Patty returns home after failing to find Tara. By 12:36, she leaves again to drive around the community and then even went on to the Manzano Expressway in terms of locating her. By 1:10, Patty returns home, checks the garage, and sees if the bike is there. Again, she's not there, so she actually wakes up her father this time. Now, it's at 1:15 that Jack calls again, and he learns that Tara is actually missing, and he comes over to her house to join in with the family. Okay. Now, he arrives at the family's house at about 1:30, and that's when he also brings over a friend with him, Bernard Nixon, to help look for Tara.
And I'm going to assume that the boyfriend was looked into?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I didn't actually go into that because he was so quickly eliminated, so I didn't feel like it was something that we needed to do. Yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes, guys, the boyfriend is not the one who did it. We just got to remember that. Yes. In this case, I think we can safely say he was not. 1:35, Patty and Cole, or Jake, drive up to Phillips 66 Station to see if maybe she had gotten like a flat tire and pulled over to get air on the tire. Maybe she was just having some difficulties. Yeah. By 1:45, they arrive home and Nixon was riding his bike, but he also found nothing. 1:50, Patty and Cole and Jake leave again to search the route once again, the same one on South New Mexico 47. 2:00, they stop Rio Communities Patrol officer and asked if they had seen Tara. So they asked for them to keep an eye out. And they drove off again. They turned around at the railroad tracks around 2:20. And started heading in a north direction. Around 2:30, they got near the South JFK campground entrance, and then they talked to three men in a white pickup truck. Okay, guess what? Like,
what's a pickup man?
With a camper shell.
Okay.
Yeah. This was a detail that, like, really got me, okay? They spoke with the men, and they said that the men obviously reeked of alcohol. They were drinking, and they also came off defensive.
Never a good sign.
Yeah. And they claimed to have been out there since 11 a.m., and then said they had not seen Tara at all.
Okay.
Okay, so by 2:40, Patty and Cole leave, and they stop and talk to the Rio Communities Patrol officer for a second time. They get home, and by 3:00, and they start calling hospitals and the sheriff's station, and that's when they report her missing.
Okay.
Now it's 3:15 and 3:30, and John, Jack, and Nixon, and John is her father, by the way.
Yeah, you said that.
Okay. They leave to talk to the three men in the Ford pickup truck at the campgrounds again. Now, the three men in the pickup are still at the park ground when they get there. Campground when they get there.
Okay.
Okay.
Still drinking.
Only this time, they tell the guys that they've been there since 11:30. Obviously, that's a 30-minute difference.
Yeah, but I feel like that's 11:30. That's not a... That wouldn't... Getting that detail wrong wouldn't it? Especially if they're drinking.
Not if you take into consideration the time frame.
No, I still feel like that's not... To me, that I would say something. I'd be like, got here like 10:30.
Yeah, okay.
I could get that wrong.
Yeah. So, again, they said they hadn't seen Tara. And, again, they appeared to be aggressive and defensive. And it seemed like they just didn't want John and the boys to get near the truck, especially towards the back of it, like the bed of it.
Okay. That would be suspicious to me. Yeah, that would be like, what's back there?
So by 4:00, John and the boys go home and they start speaking with Officer Gene Kirby. By 4:30, Kirby and Patty drive back to the railroad tracks and to the campground. But when Officer Kirby and Patty returned to the campground, the three men in the pickup truck were parked near the entrance now.
Okay, and did they look into the back of the truck and see what was there?
It actually doesn't say anything about that.
I would think that's something yeah.
to do. It just says, yeah, it just points that out and doesn't put in any detail. And I'm thinking maybe that's why they didn't leave any details, because maybe this might actually be them knowing who, why they're reviewing the case now and looking to bring, start bringing charges.
Yeah, but I feel like if they had found something there, like they went and looked and they saw her, that would have been something. That is enough to charge somebody if you have somebody's body in the back.
Yeah. If the body was in the back.
Yes, if the body yeah. was in the back.
Let's just say later that afternoon, early evening, same day, September 20th, search groups, family, friends, law enforcement, everyone starts searching the campgrounds and all of the surrounding areas until approximately about 2 o'clock in the morning with still no signs of Tara. Now it's the next day, September 21st, 6:30, between 6:30 and 7 a.m., another organized search team is sent out by Sicaro Search and Rescue. Let's see.
I like your little beat.
You gotta dance to the good stuff. Now, there is some information that it says it's obviously based on witness, so take that.
With a grain of salt.
Yeah. He came forward saying that he actually saw two people in the pickup at 11:45 a.m. So that's like...
That was at the campground?
Yeah.
Not three, but two.
But the truck that was behind her. That he saw two people in the truck.
Okay, that would make sense because that other guy said that he saw one driving and one crouched. A human. So that could be the second person. So yeah. That does make sense. But is it the same pickup truck that was following her or the same pickup truck that was at the campground? Do they know?
Doesn't say here.
Okay.
But they do believe that at least two men were involved in Calico's abduction. So, yeah. I'm not really sure what I even... Like, without all the details, I feel like... How are we supposed to... I guess it really doesn't matter, because if we're not the jury, we don't really need to know the details until afterwards.
I don't know. I feel like I should know everything.
I know. I feel like, come on, guys. You made it public. Give us everything. Stop keeping secrets.
Hopefully they figure out what it is that they're looking into. They find some new stuff. They release what they can that's not going to compromise the trial.
Yeah.
And hopefully they actually find something that...
I hope they actually do know who it is and that they actually have even, like, the smallest thing that, like, it usually is. It's usually just the smallest freaking thing that, like, just seals the deal. So I'm hoping they finally got that and that this review that they're doing, I hope it doesn't take too long, but...
I hope it's not just a small thing because...
Yeah.
Reasonable doubt. If it's just something small that you'd be like, well, depending on who's looking at it, how they're looking mm-hmm. at it, that gives reason to doubt. So we don't want any of that.
Yeah, definitely not. But sometimes we just gotta work with what we have. And I hope we are able to find out what actually happened to her, because her body's never been found.
And if she was in that picture, maybe that's a good sign that they're keeping her alive?
I don't know.
It was like 30 years ago.
Yeah, but if she's in that picture, then the only thing I can think of is trafficking.
Her mom needs closure. Her family yeah. needs closure.
Mm-hmm. And her mom deserves that. I was reading and read the reports that I guess she like wrote a story, a book or something. And I want to read it now. I'm like, I need to hear,
as a parent,
I need to feel how she felt, even from a distance. So, like, heaven forbid anything happen, it's easier to be able to relate to people.
As a parent, I can't even yeah. imagine that heartbreak of losing your child, but, mm-hmm. like, losing to them in such, like,
a tragic,
mysterious way where you don't even know if they're alive or if mm-hmm. they're dead, if they suffered, what's going on.
I feel like that's why it's so tragic, because like it's a suffering to the parent that like just never goes away. It's that thought that like literally gets you even in the middle of your sleep. Our hearts go out to the family.
We're going to keep following up with this case, and we will let you guys know if there is any news or updates to it.
All right. Thank you guys once again for joining us, and have a good day. Bye.